Hey listeners, Chloe here. If you need to stay as up to date with the latest developments and innovations in the luxury industry as I do, you need to dive into Vogue Business. It's your ticket to a global perspective on fashion and beauty, delivering exclusive insights that will give you the edge in this competitive, dynamic industry. Just visit VogueBusiness.com today and use the code RUN20 at checkout to join the Vogue Business community. That's VogueBusiness.com, promo code RUN20. Don't miss out. I'm going to ask you about Fashion Week.
So it's the most wonderful time of the year.
It is coming to the close of New York Fashion Week. Only three more fashion weeks to go.
Oh, and I'm already exhausted.
Are you surviving?
I'm already exhausted. This is The Run Through. I'm Choma Nardi.
And I'm Chloe Mel. Today, we're joined by two of our favorite colleagues. So welcome, guys. We're very excited to have you at the heels of New York Fashion Week.
Hello. Yeah. I love this. I feel like Delicious Dish on SNL. Anyway, I'm Laia Garcia Furtado, and I'm the senior fashion news editor at Vogue Runway.
And Jose Crielas Unzueta.
Period. You ate that.
Oh, thank you.
I am the fashion news writer at Vogue Runway.
I mean, where should we start? Maybe we should start with Pharrell being announced as the Louis Vuitton creative director. What are everyone's thoughts?
So unexpected. I mean, there were rumors.
Mm-hmm. Tell us the rumors.
That it was going to be maybe Martine Rose,
yeah,
whom we love, or even Grace Wales Bonner, whom we also love.
Mm.
And that seemed very exciting.
Yeah.
And this is a different kind of excitement.
No, personally, I'm excited.
Are you? Okay.
I'm always excited when people outside of my friends outside of fashion are texting me furiously because it means that there's like cultural impact. And I think If like, you know, Pharrell's track record is anything to go by, he will bring in creatives, you know, black and brown creatives who will kind of energize the house. I think the show is going to be an amazing event. And a lot of people were disappointed that it wasn't, a young unknown name or not known outside of the fashion world. But, you know, I think Pharrell is actually going to bring some energy and some pizzazz and also hopefully a lot of fresh new creative talent. So that's my two cents.
Well, to that point, my husband's former boss, he's not old, is an avid listener of the pod, knows nothing about fashion, texted me yesterday being like, I would like a breakdown of why Pharrell, who I understood to be a musician and producer, is qualified to design Louis Vuitton. So if Pete is asking me that, I feel like people are really wondering. And I mean, he does have some qualified.
Yeah. I mean, he was the first person to collaborate with Chanel. The first person, you know, and you would never expect it to be a man. But I think Carl saw in him someone who was a forward thinker, someone who took risks, someone who'd really enjoyed fashion from the inside out. And I think that's really important. I think, you know, often we talk about, you know, the fact that we want a designer who really enjoys clothes and we want women to be dressing women. I also think this is a point of, like, he knows that customer.
Mm-hmm.
He's been hired as a creative director. He is, you know, it's a kind of a different task than being someone who's nuts and bolts designing.
He's not pinning the muslins.
Yeah, he's not sketching anything either.
No,
that's
so it's going to be about vision, mood, vibe. And I think he's going to be an incredible vibe master at,
I mean,
vibe master.
Yeah, he is a vibe master.
And I think the thing is, like, he is such a fashion oracle when it comes to menswear, right? Like, the way he's, and Chanel is a good example, the way he used to wear, like, pearl. Like, he was the first one that started wearing pearls, right? Like, that's the reason. I mean, there's a reason why he was the face of the new masculinity issue that GQ did back in the day, right?
Good point.
Is sort of like, he has brought in a lot of freshness to menswear in the landscape. So it makes a lot of sense. Makes a lot of sense because LV with Virgil had become, like, this cultural powerhouse, right? That existed beyond fashion.
Virgil Abloh, who was the former creative director of Louis Vuitton Men's, who passed away last year.
Away at the age of 41.
Yeah, November 2021. It's been over a year now. Yeah. So I think that's what's interesting, right? Because we know that Pharrell, again, like as Chomo was saying, like he's going to bring like incredible creatives, right? He's not going to be the one that's just like doing it.
Yeah, it's not going to be bad.
Exactly. But I think it's also interesting because when I think of someone like Martine Rose, I'm like, it's been her turn. You know, it's been time for her to lead something. It's been time for her to step in. Like, she's been, you know, in the industry for so long.
Does Martine have her own brand?
Yes, she does.
Martine is, like, her name.
Yeah, Martine Rose. She has an eponymous label. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, again, she's influenced so much of menswear in her own way. She's influenced people like Pharrell, most likely, right? Like, He's probably like looking at her runway shows and being like, oh, that's sick. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when does the turn of the designer to take that step come?
So I think that's interesting. Let me counter you. Ooh. Do you think, because I often think that when designers like Martine, they take these big positions, their own label suffers. And I think her brand has become, you know, such a force. And, you know, my feeling is that I'm not sure if those positions are as attractive to these young designers as they once were, and that a lot of them would want to work on their own brand to get to a point where mm-hmm. their brands can really stand.
Great. Okay, the next item on our agenda that we wanted to discuss is something that when I first read it, I was like, what's a mishishish boot? And then I thought maybe it's mischief, but with no vowels. Can someone help me out here? I don't know what's happening.
I think you would be correct. Yes, I mean, I think you can't, if you, for some reason, I'm getting fed like mischief boot content at a rate that
is TikTok is like packed.
Full.
What is this? I've never seen it. I don't know what it is.
So they look like Papa Smurf boots. Okay. They are red. They are intentionally cartoonish.
Okay. What are they made out of?
They're made out of kind of like a,
I've never seen them in real life. But they're like a vacuum, sort of, because they are just like, I think they're molded
but
rubber.
People were
or something,
wearing
right?
them during Fashion Week.
They were.
We most certainly posted one on Street Style.
And one of my friends texted me, she was like, how many times have you seen the red boots already? And I'm like, I haven't, but I've seen all of the posts on social media about how people are wearing them all
they
the time.
They don't sound easy to walk in.
No, they don't look great moving. And then Diplo was seen wearing them at a
basketball
game.
And what is Mischief?
It's this brand that kind of it actually is quite good at creating these viral moments. Mm-hmm. But let's see. Let's have a look. Mischief.
This sounds goofy.
Yeah. I mean, but
it's
you know.
It's mischievous.
Oh, they didn't they do the little Nas X very controversial shoes that had like blood in them or something?
They were allegedly a
That was, I think,
was that Mischief?
Was it with Nike?
No. It was fake with Nike.
Yes. There you go.
It was with Fikey.
There you go.
Yes.
Laia's face right now is
the
so
Satan
excited.
Shoes. they made the, you know, in inverted comma, the Satan shoes, that little nonsense.
Satan shoes that had real blood, quote unquote.
Exactly. Yeah.
Genius marketing, honestly.
Yeah.
For a move to be this viral.
Right before Fashion Week, too.
Speaking of going viral, I was very confused. One thing I did see on my limited Instagram was the Panera bag.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what this is. Okay, I did see it in person.
I did see it in person, too.
I'm sorry. Is Panera smart enough to be like, this is going to be the way we crush Fashion Week?
So
I think it's just like they have.
I agree.
I think all these companies have really good social media people. And I think that's where it comes from.
That's the thing. I think, you know, Lion
Eyes. Can you buy it?
You can. My friend bought it.
And how much does it retail for?
I'm not sure. I'm going to ask her.
I should go in tonight.
But she wore it to Area, actually, to the Area show.
I think that's where I saw.
Yeah.
Who do we think Ghost designed it?
Yeah, is it made out of like nice leather?
I didn't touch it. But
don't you think that they had like the Fendi baguette? Famously, the Fendi baguette was what they called the sort of horizontal over the shoulder bag that Carrie Bradshaw made very famous that comes in, you know, 1 million types of beading, leopard prints, etc. Because it fits snugly under your armpit. There you go.
Wow, it was only $39.50. $39.50.
The Panera bag?
Yeah, it's sold out. I mean, it looks, I'm not mad at it.
It's kind of cute.
It has these, you know, interlocking P's, the way you have the interlocking F's logo. Mm-hmm. It's bright green. I'm not sure how that references an actual baguette, but how they landed on that
Panera
color.
Panera green.
It's Panera green.
It's a genius idea. I'm sort of into it.
It's really smart.
$39. It's actually
and it's again it's good. Funny. I think that's sort of what's interesting. Lai and I talk about this all the time about very online people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like these social media people or marketing people that are on the internet all the time sort of trying to figure out what is working, what isn't, what people are talking about. And Panera has become such a thing again on these little corners of the internet, and all it takes and these corners are like again Gen Z fashion-y like subcultures. So of course you're like, "Oh, let's just do this." You do it like very limited run. It's silly. 10 people buy it and like you call it sold out and then you just go viral for like a week. And then again, you do it right before Fashion Week. Someone wears it. It ends up in like a, you know, street sell page. And then.
And now I'm like, oh, should I go try some Panera bread?
I'm actually kind of hungry.
The soup is actually kind of good.
All I had today was a cookie.
Exactly.
I mean, the Fashion Week toy.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, there's a granola bar in my pocket. So.
Yeah, don't pass out on us. Because we have, next up, we have your top three moments of New York Fashion Week so far.
Oof.
Because you guys have been reviewing, right? Will you give us a sense of what a typical day is like for a Vogue runway reviewer?
Disassociating.
You know that meme of Lady Gaga in an interview that goes like, bus, club, bus, another club, no sleep. It's kind of like that. I'm having a lot of fun.
Yeah, we love it.
This is actually the dream job, so yes. I can't like... I'm not going to pretend like it's
not. The dream job can be tiring.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's like the Olympics for
you
guys,
exactly.
right?
Exactly. But, you know, like, it really is the Olympics, and I'm wearing very uncomfortable footwear for that. But, you know, it's fine. But it's funny because, okay, so one of our days is usually, like, if we have shows in the morning, we usually do appointments in the morning. Uh-huh.
So then we'll shows. Go,
exactly. So we'll do, like, appointments for showrooms or digital releases.
What's the morning starting time, like, 9?
9 has, well, I
well,
did an
Laya's
8 a.m. Yeah.
Wow.
I did an 8 a.m. for Rodarte. But like, sometimes there's two reasons why we may do an appointment. One is smaller brands that don't do a runway show. Sometimes they just have, you know, set up in a showroom and you just go and you see the clothes and you talk to the designer.
And it's by appointment, which is
and
weird.
Yes.
Mm-hmm, and it's by appointment. Or sometimes for some of the shows that we review, we meet the designers beforehand. So we can get the lowdown on the show, because when the show ends, you don't always have time to go backstage to like go and talk to them. Mm-hmm. Or also sometimes it's really crazy.
Yeah, there's
so
like
you sort of get all your
reporters.
Quotes out of
so
the way.
So you got
before.
To do that with Rodarte. Mm-hmm. That's so fun.
Yeah. So they were like, "Can you come at 8? And I was like, "For you, yes, I can absolutely."
So tell us everything. What was it like seeing the clothing up close?
Yeah. So Rodarte, they're two sisters from California. They've always been sort of like separate from the fashion system.
Mm-hmm.
When they started, they were just like, they like make all their clothes, and they were all about like horror movies and like very intense handiwork, and it was all like very cinematic. You know, the set this year was a banquet setup, and everything was silver, and on the tables there were like fruits, cakes, breads again, chandeliers, and everything was covered in silver glitter. So they were like, we wanted to do fairies this season. And it's like, of course. So their mom drew these like beautiful fairies, and they like blew them up in dresses. But being Rodarte, they were like, but they're goth fairies. And I was like, yes. And so when I got to their like temporary showroom, they had all these like all of the gowns. If you go on the Vogue runway app and check out the Rodarte collection. Hashtag ad. Just kidding, no, because it's us.
But also,
they're all like huge gowns with like long sleeves, like very like the first like four looks were basically Morticia Adams.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
just like
it was very like Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, but many of the gowns were really heavy, so they couldn't hang them. So it was just sort of like a lot of ghost
creepy
dresses laying down, which is exactly
so
the Rodarte vibe.
It's so Rodarte.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed.
So I guess that's one of my favorite things that I saw so far this season.
Has there been an overarching trend that you've seen?
Flora and fauna.
Flora and
it's
fauna.
Been actually, it's actually very funny because, you know, you were speaking about the fruits at Rodarte and, you know, the fairies. And that day you also went to Kalina. You also reviewed Kalina. And I was actually, what was funny about Kalina Strada is that, you know, The show is called Please Don't Eat My Friends. You know, and Kalina is very sustainable.
Tell us a little bit about Kalina Strada.
Yeah, so the name of the designer is actually Hillary Tamer. She is just, like, very cool, super downtown, artsy vibe. She makes really fun clothes. And, you know, she has such a specific community around her. But the ethos of the brand is very sustainable, super vegan, super, like, you know. Like, that already kind of paints a picture. So then, if I tell you that the show is called Please Don't Eat My Friends and the invitation has two little piglets, like they're talking to each other, and it's so cute. But then, you know, I was doing this video for Vogue Club with her. So I go to do a preview while she's like fitting, whatever. And she shows me all of these like animal prosthetics. And I'm like, of course. So she turned like Please Don't Eat My Friends. She turned all of her friends, because a lot of the people that walk her models are her friends. So she turned all of her friends into animals and asked us to not eat them. But again, we saw a lot of animals at Kalina in the prosthetics, which are really fun. Then we saw bananas at Area.
Bananas at Area. They also had watermelon and
yes.
grapes.
Then Puppets and Puppets also had banana bags.
and fried eggs.
And fried eggs, which one you have.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Actually, it's been a very food... Sorry, I have trouble with English is my second language, and so I have trouble with my O's.
Okay.
If they are similar. So
yeah.
Food. Mm-hmm. It was very food-themed season, because also Puppets had the eggs and the bananas and the cookies. So Puppets and Puppets is also downtown brand, and they have become famous because they make these, like, black bags that have a chocolate chip cookie on the front.
Okay,
and
yes.
So now they've added, like, bananas or fried egg and...
Sounds like there's a lot of, like, Trump Loy puns involved.
Very punny. And, again, like, flora, fauna. Like, so it's been a lot of that, which is quite interesting.
I feel like when you said that English isn't your first language, I want to know what your first language is.
Oh, yeah. My first language is Spanish because I was born and raised in Puerto Rico. That's why we're, like, mi gente.
Yeah,
We started on the same day. Exactly. Jose and I like to joke that we work at Boca Rangway.
Rangway, yeah. I mean, and it was so funny because, you know, we walked in and we're wearing the same Telfer bag, orange medium chopper bag.
Yeah, orange
Spanish
medium chopper.
Spanish is both of our first languages. Yeah. Spanish is both of our first languages. Yeah. It's just like, you know.
So, Jose, where were you born?
I was born and raised in La Paz, Bolivia. And I moved to the U.S. for college in like 2014. Yeah.
And when did you move here? Last?
I moved to the U.S. for college in 2001.
Off the record.
Awesome.
Now, explain the Tory Renaissance. Tori Burch.
Yeah, Tori Burch.
Who's sort of having...
She's having a moment. Yeah.
And she earned all of those moments.
Tory Renaissance.
So, the story is...
Here's the story.
The story is that Tori, you know, she used to be CEO and creative director. And then last year or 2 years ago.
I think two now.
2 years ago, she stepped away from being CEO. Mm-hmm. And she only has time.
Well, to her husband.
To her husband, yes.
Exactly.
But now all she does is just, you know, make
beautiful
clothes.
Well, can we just say who her husband is?
Her husband is Pierre-Yves Roussel, who was not just anybody. I mean, he was the CEO of LVMH.
It's a big gap.
And she had to marry him, but she got him.
So basically, the first collection, which was like spring 20, I don't know what year it is, 22, probably.
Yeah, probably 22, 21.
Basically, Tori was like, ooh, remember Claire McCardo, this like classic American sportswear designer of like, you know, the 50s. And she was like, I remember Claire McCardo. Let's do Claire McCardo vibes. So it's all like easy dresses with pockets and like, you know, cute shirt dresses and stuff. But I feel like what really made it cool was that it was very weird, and the color palette was super weird, and there was like color blocking, and it was like, you know, it's cute enough that it didn't alienate, I think doesn't alienate her like base customer, but then all of the fashion people are like, whoa.
I think what's interesting about what's happening at Tory right now is that a lot of fashion people that are really getting into it can recognize a lot of really interesting references, right? So, for example, last season, there was this, there's this beautiful Margiela collection that's like, I think, spring 1997, that is all like bodices from mannequins, right? And then they even say like Maison Margiela, where they would say like just the name of the form or the brand or whatever. And they are like really beautiful shapes. So, you know, there was that reference. There's some Pradaisms there that people recognize from the 90s. There's a lot of these little like tidbits of fashion that we all love that we have seen a lot of designers resurface that she sort of like her and her team, you can tell, are just very aware and like very into fashion. And then she's starting to finally steal a lot of these little moments that she's into or her team are into her collection. So then when you see them all together, you're like, oh, that's a really cool interpretation of this idea from like back, you know, 10 years ago or 20 or whatever. And that is really interesting.
And the price point is right. We love Tori.
Yeah.
By we, I mean me.
Yeah. And, you know, I had this very cool fashion. Like one of my highlights of fashion was that when we were sitting at Tori, I was right behind the balls. And it's just one of those things that I was like, oh, I really do have this job. You know, we started at the
you
same time.
You were staring at a perfectly groomed
bob. Yes. And, you know, my finale video, like, you can tell, like, you can see, like, a little bit of the bob and the sunglasses. And I'm just kind of, and, like, my mom replied and she was like, this is crazy. And I'm like, girl, I know. Trust. You know? Again, like, it was one of those moments, like, my pinch me was that. Mm-hmm. That I was like, oh, wow, like, this is a fashion show.
Thank you guys so much. I learned everything. And good luck with the end of Fashion Week and future fashion weeks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having us.
Oh, God, I didn't say thank you.
Yeah, that is actually really funny.
The Run Through will be back in just a moment.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to the Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hi everyone, it's Chloe, and I'm so excited to share something fabulous with you. Vogue's first ever global fashion community, Vogue Club. Our members get to mingle with Vogue editors, yes, including me, and fellow fashion enthusiasts at exclusive events around the world. And that's just the start. Membership opens doors to the fashion industry, bringing you expert career advice and insider style and beauty tips. What are you waiting for? Head over to vogue.com/membership to join, and here's a little treat. Use code TRT20 and snag 20% off your membership. That's TRT20 for 20% off your ticket to Vogue Club. Are you in?
This is The Run Through, and I'm Chloe Mao. Last week, we taped an interview with the designer Erdem. He's one of the biggest names in London fashion and one of my personal faves. You've seen his dresses on the cover of Vogue and on everyone from Keira Knightley to the Duchess of Cambridge. He is showing at London Fashion Week this weekend, and we wanted to talk to him in advance about his creative process. Since we taped that interview, however, the unimaginable happened. A horrific 7.8 magnitude earthquake hit eastern Turkey and northern Syria. More than 41,000 people have been reported dead. So we reached out to Erdem again this week to check in on his family.
Yeah, Chloe, my father was from eastern Turkey. He was from a specific area called Hatay, which is a province in eastern Turkey. And specifically, he was from a city of Antakya.
Okay.
And maybe you might know the name Antakya because it was on the New York Times. There was a very shocking title that came out just last week that said, "No more Antakya," with a statement that the entire city has been wiped out.
Oh my God.
It was the most horrific thing to read. Both my parents passed away when I was quite young, but I still have so many family members living there. Thankfully, everyone is safe and sound.
Wow.
But what is so important to get across is how many people are now displaced,
right,
and obviously without anywhere to live. So the need for support is greater than ever. So this past weekend, all profits from .com and our flagship store in London here went to both the British Red Cross and also a foundation called the AHBAP.
Okay.
Which is a Turkish foundation, the Foundation of Anatolian People and Peace Platform, which is a nonprofit organization based in Turkey. And they have been incredibly quick to react to the to implementing support.
How did you find that organization?
Through actually family members that live in Turkey.
Oh,
so
wow.
I encourage everyone to support both the AHBAP and also over here, we support the British Red Cross in America. I imagine it's just the Red Cross.
Right.
But any support is fantastic, and it's so needed at the moment.
Do you have a specific memory of Antakya that you keep thinking about the past week or so, or anything?
Well, I remember, you know, I remember my grandmother, I remember my aunt, and my, you know, my immediate family. But I think that the memory that stands out is going to the Museum of Archaeology that was just so amazing there with my sister, and we dug out kind of all of these old pictures of us there, and of course there's so many amazing memories.
Any new sites that you found really helpful about learning what's happening on the ground there?
I've always felt like the BBC is so measured generally in the coverage, but I think the most important thing is now more than ever, you know, help is needed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably the most important thing to get across.
Well, we're so grateful to you for leading the charge on keeping everyone focused on this, because as we know, the media cycle tends to move away from things after they happen. And I think it's important that we keep focusing on how much this is going to be an ongoing tragedy for people there.
Absolutely. And Chloe, thanks so much. It was so great to reconnect on this, and it's so important. So thank you.
Thanks, Erdem. Bye.
Gosh, that's just so harrowing. I mean, who would have thought that even that this...
I know, and we taped with him prior to that, and our conversation was very different. We had caught up with him via Zoom, and I hadn't seen him since, I think, before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I met him maybe 10 years ago. I always love wearing his dresses. I think they're so feminine and appealing and elegant. But it was a treat to be able to talk to him about what his process looks like. And also just, he lives a very, very thoughtfully tasteful life. And it's fun to talk to him about all of the things he likes to do and see and appreciate.
Yeah, I mean, so obviously the tone of this interview that you're going to hear is quite different.
Hi, Erdem. I'm so happy to see you.
Shoma and Chloe, it looks like we're about to record an album together.
I know, doesn't it?
Our group would be called.
What would it be called?
Maybe it's not En Vogue, but In Vogue.
Or, yes.
That was one of the original titles for the podcast, right? In Vogue, wasn't it? No.
In Vogue. I much prefer your new title, which is My Favorite British, Turkish, Canadian Fashion Designers. But I think it's so niche because, like, I mean, there's not many of us out there, but I'm excited about who you'll do next.
Your Objects of Affection video was quite the hit, and everybody's quite obsessed with the alarm clock.
Yes, that coffee alarm clock.
Yes, tell us more. I've never heard of an alarm clock that's also a coffee maker.
Yes. I mean, what more do you want from an alarm clock that gives you a drip black coffee? It's good. I used it this morning. And when it's early and it's still dark outside and you can smell coffee, that's like the nicest way to wake up.
It was a gift from your husband?
It was a gift from my husband. Yeah. Philip, he's actually very good at... he's very good at giving gifts, and now I'm going to go blank on every single other gift he's given me. But he is generally a very good gift giver.
And for those of people who don't know, your husband Philip Joseph is an architect, and he designed your house.
Yes.
Is that ever stressful? I feel like sometimes when I'm in, you know, we renovated our house, and I was like, God damn the architect! Why does this look like this? Are there ever frictions like that, or not really?
No, because I think Philip, we've known each other since college. So we just know each other so well. And he's, I think the whole way through, he had such a clear vision. And also, like, our house is built in the 1820s. So more than anything, it was about like this kind of restoration.
Right.
Like, Philip had such like love for the bones of the house.
It's a townhouse in Bloomsbury, correct?
Yeah, correct.
That was owned by the same woman for 50 years?
Yes, she moved in 1953, and she died at 103.
God bless.
Was she a famous painter?
Not particularly famous, but she was a portrait painter, and she comes from like a kind of long line of artists. And but also strangely, she's a twin.
And
I'm a twin, and also Philip's a twin.
Philip's a twin too. That I've never heard of. Twins marrying. I mean, I guess it makes sense, but that's day. Cool.
guys... and also, Philip has older twin brothers.
No.
So he has,
gosh.
Yes.
Oh, his poor mother. Fascinating. Okay. This past spring collection, I loved reading about how it started with you going to visit the museums and seeing behind the scenes of how they're restoring pieces. But what happens from there? Do you then go back to the studio with your team and you just start sketching, or are there, what are the steps from that point?
One thing, for example, we were talking to Larry Keith, who's the chief restorer at the National Gallery. And he was restoring a 15th century painting that was so kind of far gone. One of the corners was completely destroyed. And he was using a Dutch etching that had been done in the 17th century of the painting to inform how he could go about restoring the painting. So,
wow.
I know that you love portraiture, and I have to ask you, have you been to the Lynette Yidiam Barocache exhibit at the Tate? I just thought, what did you think?
I thought it was one of the most beautiful, powerful things I've ever seen. And I thought it was so beautifully curated. And she's an amazing person, artist. She has in the past, she's often come to the show, actually.
Oh, she loves fashion, and she's incredibly stylish. Yeah, she has. She's really, I mean, you can tell from her paintings, because all of the portraits, she paints from memory. I mean, they're all kind of imagined characters. Mm. She doesn't use people she doesn't have sittings. And they're all so fabulously dressed, intentional, very quiet, minimalist. But you really get a sense that she has an eye for fashion. Oh my God, I'd die to have her on. We should get her on. Yeah, I love that you've shown at the National Portrait Gallery. Why hold shows in those kind of environments? Because I think you can really get a sense of how your love of portraiture too, and how the clothes and the collections kind of are in conversation with the environment.
There's something kind of interesting when you have these 8 minutes to take an audience somewhere, and you present these ideas that you've been working on for the last 6 months. And the last show was at the British Museum. It was all to do with the idea of restoration. Myself and the design team, we went to the V&A to research how textiles are preserved. We were working with the British Museum to look at how ancient objects are preserved.
That must have been fascinating.
Yeah, it's interesting. It was almost like the venue kind of informed actually where I would go with the collection, and I'd shown in the British Museum the year before. And as you said, Choma, the National Portrait Gallery is also somewhere where I've loved showing, and it's such a wonderful, special place.
Didn't you show on the eve of the state funeral of the Queen?
I did. Showing in the British Museum, we were in the colonnade, the exterior colonnade, so you were kind of protected from the elements, and it was just as the sun was going down, and Of course, the flags would be at half mast, but I didn't realize, of course, you know, that there's a huge flag, a huge Union Jack in the middle of the British Museum that was flying at half mast.
Oh, wow.
It was such a kind of incredibly sad, but also kind of moving moment. It was such a strange and also kind of quite surreal, you know. And of course, when everything was happening, there were questions of what was going to happen during London and London fashion and the timing of everything. It was interesting. We all kind of, I think all of us in our own way, kind of reflected on her and what she meant to all of us individually.
Yeah, I did love the black veils. I don't know if that was intentional.
Was that an addition, or were you always
planning on having those beautiful kind of... It was very melancholic and beautiful.
Yeah, thank you. It was Well, in truth, when we were researching at the V&A, we were looking at how costumes are preserved and looking at these like kind of covers and how they would almost like veil the kind of the garments to protect them from light.
That's
damage.
Interesting. So it was more about that. Erdem, will you just take us back a little bit? Tell us a little bit about where you were born, where you grew up.
I was born in Montreal. I was born in Canada. And Erdem's a Turkish name. Mm-hmm. So my father was Turkish from Eastern Turkey. My mother was from the Midlands. So from Birmingham. From
George Eliot land, no?
Birmingham's a very special place. Okay. I don't know how to kind of explain.
I didn't realize you were part Brummy.
Is that what we call someone from Birmingham?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. All right.
Brummy. Very. And my mom was really from like a Brummy part of Birmingham. Funnily enough.
What's an attribute of someone who's Brummy?
Like a very working class.
Okay.
Like,
is this like cottage pie and sausage and mash type of environment?
Yes. Let's go with that.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Do you remember when you first fell in love with fashion? Was it as a kid or older?
I was always preoccupied with fashion in the sense that I was always fascinated by women. I remember particularly like my mom and my mother's friends. I was always really always so interested in what they wore, how they walked, how they talked. I loved all things that were kind of feminine and female. I also think maybe that has something to do with having a twin sister. So having someone who's, you know, a part of you, and but also someone who's, of course, like the opposite as well. And yeah, I was always kind of very fascinated by kind of the language of the feminine. I even remember as a child kind of drawing just women. I was interested in drawing women. Everyone else were drawing like trees and apples, and I drew women generally with big skirts.
Oh, wow.
I heard you also interned with Vivian Westwood, because you passed away very recently. Yeah. What was that experience like?
That was amazing. And that was actually before the Royal College of Art. So that was while I was still doing my BA, and it was in 1999, 2000. And it was amazing. I remember actually the first day I was like given the task of cutting jersey, like a silk jersey that was impossible to cut.
And wow.
I knew how to do it. And I, of course, like made a huge mess of it. And I was kind of sent away and I thought, oh my gosh, this has ended before it started. But I was sent away to work in the archives.
Oh, that is hysterical.
Which I thought was like, I thought it was, you know, terrible that I'd been sent away from the atelier, and but actually ended up being kind of extraordinary to see all of those collections, you know, Storm in a Teacup and these Mr. Pearl corsets and, you know, everything, the kind of the history of this huge body of work that was hers and eventually Andreas's. And it's amazing. I loved it. It was such a, you know, it was there that I understood I really wanted to, you know, finish studying in London. It was there I understood I wanted to start my own label. It was, I think, you know, her vision and her view of history and femininity, all of these things were so, you know, extraordinary, like the way she cuts the, you know, I think she was so incredibly important. Actually, and I thought it was
Did you
amazing.
Stay in touch with her?
I didn't. And it was, you know, you kind of, as an intern, you kind of,
sure,
you know, you pass through. And but I did many years later say, I interned with you, and it was such an important thing. And we were at the same event, and she was wonderful.
Hmm. We would love to talk to you about biopics and your love of Madonna, and
we saw a lot of Madonna on your Instagram.
Yeah, the biopic has been canceled. Thoughts?
Well, I have my Madonna Mondays, as you know, and I think she is, well, the big question is the tickets, like getting tickets for like the farewell tour, which
we were talking about that yesterday.
Challenge.
Do you have your tickets yet?
I don't have my tickets. I'm trying to figure out who, what, where, when, but I do love her. And, there'll always be a Madonna Monday.
Have you ever seen Madonna perform?
I have. Yeah, I have. And I have worked with her. I made her something for the American Music Awards.
Wow. And
actually, Madonna is how I came to work with Ibrahim Kamara, who's amazing. And Ibrahim and I worked together for 3 years.
Fantastic stylist and the editor-in-chief of ID. Describe the look that you made.
It was like a polka dot lace dress. And it was very kind of like with a pussy bow, very like Belle de Jour.
Oh, love. And I'm curious, I would love to know a little bit about your dog. Because I thought that she was really the star of your Objects of Affection video.
Well, Chloe, I have to confess, it's my sister's dog. I am a co-parent, but she loves Vogue, Pippi, the cockapoo. And so she wanted to
She had to be in the video.
Where does the name
Pippi come from?
Pippi Longstocking. But she's very
my favorite. She's
very much my sister's dog. But I take her, I often have weekend custody of Pippi.
Oh, honestly, as the owner of a very loud, very demanding dog, part-time ownership of a dog is really the way to go. I highly recommend it.
Also, a dog in New York, I imagine, comes with challenges.
Nightmare. So, Erdem, I heard from Mark Holgate, who is Vogue's fashion news director, and I know an old friend of yours, that his favorite restaurant in London is Chez Erdem. You're quite the... apparently there's a mean fish pie that's coming out of your kitchen.
That's a huge compliment. Mark and I also go to the Hollywood Diner on 6th Avenue, so I'm worried that maybe maybe comparing to some other places we go to, but I will take the compliment. I love cooking. Philip is very much a baker.
Okay.
He likes desserts, and I am much more...
That's interesting because I feel like architecture is so precise, and to be a baker, you really have to be precise. So that fits. Yes. And you're more creative in your endeavors. What's the Erdem specialty?
I like a Sunday roast, so I'm pretty good at it. I'm not sure if either of you are vegetarian, but I like a lamb shank.
Like
a good roast potato. I'm into a good stodgy kind of English.
Is that a very Brummy? What did you call it? Someone from Birmingham.
I would say it's a general English thing.
Okay.
The Sunday roast is...
It's what you do on... Yeah, it's like a pub lunch as well. It's like what you do. You go to the pub and you have a roast.
Or you go to
Erdem's.
Yes. And then you have a bath afterwards.
This is the dream Sunday.
Wish you all the best for the show.
I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I'm very flattered. I can't wait to see you in...
We want you to come back to the Hollywood Diner, and we'll see you there.
Exactly.
Date at the Hollywood Diner. So, Erdem's fashion show is this Sunday, February 19th, and you can see all of the looks on Vogue Runway.
And again, if you would like to donate to the Turkish-Syrian earthquake relief efforts, go to theredcross.org, or as Erdem suggested, ahbap.org. Thank you for listening to the show this week. Bye. The Run Through with Vogue is a production of Condé Nast Entertainment. I'm Chloe Mel.
And I'm Cho Minardi, and we'll be back next week.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Lale Arakoglu, host of Women Who Travel. Each story from our guests and listeners is totally unique and utterly personal. We love hearing about your first impressions when visiting someplace new.
My first trip to The Patagonia region was on the Argentine side. I couldn't believe the expansive territory. It's like being in Tibet. The emptiness and the harshness, really, I found transformative.
Or a story told when safely back on dry land.
You know, things happened every single day. I ran out of gas on a jet ski in the middle of the ocean. And I was like, what if a sea creature comes to eat me? But then I'm delusional. I was like, I'll make friends with it and it won't eat me. And maybe I'll ride that back to shore.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
Join me, Lale Arakoglu, every week for more adventures on Women Who Travel, wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Hey, Run Through listeners. Are you curious about what goes on behind the scenes at Vogue and in the world of fashion? Join Vogue Club, a one-of-a-kind fashion community where you can unlock exclusive access to Vogue editors, industry players, and fellow members, as well as receive expert style advice, tickets to VIP events, handpicked gifts, and so much more. Visit VogueClub.com today and get 20% off using promo code THERUNTHROUGH20. That's VogueClub.com, promo code THERUNTHROUGH20.